Welcome to Happy Horror Time. My name's Tim Murdoch.
And my name is Matt Emmert. How is everyone doing? Tim, how are you doing today?
I've never been better.
Never?
Never.
Literally.
I am really enjoying this pandemic lifestyle.
Are you enjoying this unseasonable heat?
No. You know, it's weird. It's January, but it's like 90. I'm wearing a plaid.
And this episode's going to come out still in January, so that will still be applicable. I just want to make sure
Listen, don't be throwing around those 50-cent words with me.
You know what I hate when it comes to small talk? Talk about the weather.
I know, we just did it. Here, I'm going to mix it up. I'm going to burp. Ready?
No, please. Yum. That's why people want, if you wanted to tune in to hear Tim burp, that's probably
why
you tuned
in. I can do it a lot better.
Oh, you're so manly.
You know what? I get that a lot. People are like, hey, man.
That's actually the first adjective I think of. When I think of Tim Murdoch, I think manly.
Manly Murdoch. I got that. The people nicknamed me that.
Through your dreams or through...
Yeah, then I woke up.
It is very unseasonably
warm. If people
warm.
Call me feminine, I'll just say feminine women are fun too. So
well,
it's
also,
fine.
Feminine is not an insult. I mean,
no,
like, what makes masculine good? Here we get into a deep conversation.
That's right.
Which is funny because there's a lot of deep issues in this episode. I just want to, before... The two movies we're going to be talking about today, they're not necessarily what you would normally think of when you think of horror, but Tim and I both, they're kind of like thriller, dark enough that we wanted to talk about these on the podcast, right?
I mean, you know, when you chose them, because, you know, let's get serious. I have no opinions about everything. Everything Matt presents to me, I'm like, great.
Well, but that's an opinion.
That is true. My opinion is Matt's opinion.
No, that's
you know
not
what I'm
true.
Saying.
You
I
have
meant,
your own brain.
Oh, you're what? Absolutely. But I'm just saying, as far as like, there's such slim pickings as far as new releases are in the month of January for 2021. I liked both of the things that you brought to my attention. I was like, these are good.
Well, thank you. Because I want to stick to, because we're Happy Horror Time, and I want to stick to horror because that's what we do and that's what we love. And hopefully that's why people tune in. But like, these are, I think both these movies are dark and thrilling enough to be part, like, appeal to horror people.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, the situations that they're in are
horror.
Yes.
Horror.
These situations are scary.
I'm sorry. Speaking of scary situations, there's an Amazon Prime truck just hanging out outside our thing. What are they doing? They're taking over.
My guess is they're delivering a package.
That's crazy. I would never assume that. Prime? No, but seriously, they're here every day. Okay, Prime, we get it.
We
Everyone
can't go
uses
anywhere.
You.
It's a pandemic.
That's true. You do have to order everything. But anyway, I feel like we should jump right in because there's going to be so much to talk about, especially for this first movie. And this first movie is a little movie that you may have heard of because the trailers have been going on for a year.
I think it's even longer than
really?
That.
Really?
I mean, I feel like the trailers, I don't remember the first time I saw it, but I remember the first time I did see it, I was like, I want to see that movie.
Actually, you're right. I keep forgetting that the trailers definitely started before the pandemic, so probably late 2019, early 2020.
Because just remember, we shut down March 14th, so we are going to be on lockdown for, come March 14th, 365 days.
Which also is a year.
That is like, true. I didn't want to dazzle you with all my
you
knowledge.
Wanted a big number. That's what
I
you
did. 365.
It is weird to think about that. But, I mean, this movie, I think it was set. I think I read, and you know I'm always accurate. So,
right.
I think I read it was supposed to be released in April of 2020.
That sounds right.
It didn't happen. And then it was released at the end of December only in theaters. And we, since no theaters are open except for drive-ins, we waited till it was released on demand.
We paid $20.
$20. And the movie is called Promising Young Woman.
Yay.
It's gotten a lot of buzz. Yay.
Yay.
No, it's gotten a lot of buzz starring Carey Mulligan.
From Wall Street 2.
Wall Street Part 2. And with a lot of cameos, cameos.
They're not
cameos,
but I will say the cast was what sold me on this.
It was tons of appearances by people like Alison Brie, Jennifer Coolidge, Adam Brody.
Molly Shannon,
Chris Lowell from Veronica Mars. What's his name? Schmidt from New Girl.
I'll never remember.
Why am I not knowing
he
his
was
name
on The New Girl,
people.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Schmidt.
He's the cute one.
The
you
cute,
can just say the cute one.
Cute
people
guy
know.
From New Girl. Tons of people. But Carey Mulligan is. Oh, Laverne Cox. Can't forget her. Tons of people, but the movie is Carey Mulligan. And
you know what? I think, I mean, I don't know how the Oscars are going to work this year, but I will say I think she could
Be nominated? Yeah.
No, you know, I don't know about when, but...
Yeah. So just to set up this movie, in case you didn't see any of the trailers for the last year, it starts with she plays a girl who is basically pretending to be blackout drunk at a bar, waiting for a guy to try to take advantage of her. And, like, the opening scene is great because it really sets the scene.
But, yeah, and I mean, if you've seen the trailer, you've seen what she's doing.
Yeah, but just in case, you know, you...
Oh, no,
you
I'm just saying, like, that's... I think
the big, not yeah. like a big surprise. Yeah. Like the opening scene is Adam Brody is this creepy, you know, corporate guy who sees Carrie Mulligan.
Is he from Orange County?
California. I can't sing. I keep forgetting that, but that's a theme song. Yes. Oh, good old. You mean Seth Cohen from the OC? Did you watch the OC?
You know, I watched the first 5 episodes, so I feel like I got enough.
There was like 4 seasons and I watched every episode.
Did you really?
I did because I think after like, it was right after Dawson's Creek and I needed like a teen drama.
I'm actually really surprised I didn't commit to it, but I loved Misha Barton and I loved the other girl who went on to have her own show where she played a doctor.
What is her name?
I'll never remember it.
Dark hair.
But she dated someone from Star Wars.
These are great. We've got such great facts
I
here.
Know. You know what? We're not talking about that. We're talking about promising young
You're
woman.
Right. You're right. So Adam Brody, like they see her. She looks blackout drunk and he like offers her a ride home, but then sleazily says, why don't you just come to my apartment? And gets there. She's so drunk or he thinks that she can barely stay up. She gets like, he gets her on the bed, like removes her underwear. It's so uncomfortable
and then
because.
It's like, boom. Yeah. She is not drunk.
Yeah. She then suddenly snaps to it, you see she's been pretending the whole time, and she says what are you doing, and looks straight at him, and then it switches scenes to her like putting a notch in her notebook, so you don't know as a viewer, like, did she kill him?
Yeah, I actually did. I was like okay, we're gonna see this scene and then later it's gonna be revealed that she killed him.
So, and that's the thing, you're wondering, obviously she's on a mission of some sort and you don't know at this point, and you're like, is she killing him? Does she beat the shit out of them? Does she have like a strongly worded lecture?
I thought it was gonna be like, remember that scene in Showgirls when Elizabeth Berkley takes out that guy?
Oh yeah, with, like, the one who basically didn't he date rape her friend?
Yes. And yeah. Like I thought that was going to be more of the tone.
Well, it doesn't
of this movie.
Until shortly after that, it goes to another similar scene where she's in the apartment with McLovin, the guy who played McLovin, Christopher Mintz-Plasse.
Yeah,
whatever.
I'm not going to speak anything bad about him.
Just be honest. What were you going to say?
I just thought he was creepy, but I know that's his part. So good job.
Well, I think he's always plays creepy parts. Like he's gotten typecast in that like nerdy, dorky.
Yeah, he's in that territory where that Norman Bates, Anthony Perkins couldn't get out of.
You're like, you were such a natural at
creepy. You
are
so creepy.
That's like, I always think about when they do like casting calls for like the ugly awkward person, and you get the role. Like, do you feel like, yes, I nailed ugly awkward?
You know what? If there's a paycheck, I'll do it.
So Tim, if you were like, hey, I just got this role, it calls for ugly awkward, would you be like, excited?
Nailed it. Yeah. Yes. I would do it in a heartbeat.
Good.
Listen,
good
I'm
for
at
you.
The point. I've had my SAG card for like 20 years.
Humble brag.
I am just saying. No, that's a humble sad. It's what it is. No, because
I don't
I've
have
had
a SAG card.
You know what it gets me, Matt? It gets me screeners.
Hey, and I love taking advantage of those screeners when
you
get them.
Stop taking advantage of me. Go on.
When it says, like, do not share with anyone. Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
Oh, great.
No,
now you just
oh,
busted
great. Now
me.
You're like, nobody shares. Well, you don't, like, you don't sell them or anything.
No.
But anyway, so the Christopher Mintz-Plasse part, he's there with her, and she's again pretending to be blackout drunk, and another creepy guy who is, like, still feeding her more liquor and literally, like, puts his hands on her leg and is, like, trying to, like, finger her there. And then she does the same thing where she just, like, snaps out of it and says, like, what are you doing?
And
this
he's like,
yeah,
I think you should go. And she goes, well, just 2 seconds ago, you wanted me to stay.
Yes, this time you get a more of a glimpse into what she actually does with these guys. And she
calls
him out and says, you knew I was this drunk and you were going to keep taking it. And then she's like, do you know what I do for a living? Do you know what my name is?
Oh, yeah,
remember?
Yeah. I loved her pop quiz.
Yeah, he's
they
like,
failed.
Oh, I thought we had a connection. And she's like, really, what's my name? And he couldn't even answer her name. And she basically, like, tells him, like, you were about to have sex with someone who didn't even know what was going on.
She's educating men.
Yeah. Well, that's what you think. But so the movie goes on. You're wondering, like, what put her on this mission? Because something happened.
But it takes till, like, the middle of the movie before you know
all the details.
Yeah.
But you get these little glimpses of that she had a very close friend.
Nina.
Nina. Her name's Cassie. And who, at this point, you really find out.
I think it's like
out,
8 years earlier.
Yeah, 8 years earlier. She was in med school and her best friend was Nina. And Nina was blackout drunk at a party and was either raped by one guy or gang raped
right.
by a bunch
and
of
then
guys.
She does all these things to confront people. Well, first, that was for Connie Britton.
Oh, yes. Yeah. She goes to, the reason you find out more of the story is because she sets an appointment with the old dean of the med school she was in. She's since dropped out, and you don't know exactly why. And she basically confronts Connie Britton, who plays the dean, about, do you remember this girl? You know, there was a rape accusation, and she's basically saying, well, it was he said, she said, and we can't just believe the girl. And it's this great scene, one of the best scenes in the movie.
It is the strongest scene. It's the scene we're all waiting for because we want to know what made her do these things.
And you find out she is basically, to teach Connie Britton a lesson, she has wooed her like 17-year-old teenage daughter to a place where there's going to be, she pretends there's going to be a boy band there to meet her, but she tells Connie Britton, oh, so you are okay with like girls being drunk with a bunch of random guys, like, oh, so you should wonder where your daughter is, and tells her that her daughter is in a hotel room with a bunch
and
of like adult male guys.
She lured her daughter there by saying she was a makeup artist and she had access to the band.
And Connie Britton, of course, like, what? And tries to call her daughter and
she's
Cassie
like,
has her phone. And Connie Britton is going crazy, like, why would you do this? What do you know? Okay, I've learned my point. And basically, then she tells her, I didn't put her in a hotel with a bunch of guys. She's just at a diner. But
down
it was
the
to,
street.
Yeah, down the street. She's just to get Connie Britton to learn her lesson.
But
that,
the scene before that, she takes one of her medical student friends, Allison Brie, right? Allison Brie's Connie Britton, right?
Yes. Allison Brie was one of the old medical school friends.
And,
yes.
Like, she gets her all liquored up.
Drank, yeah.
And then she hires a guy?
Well, before she basically revisits. She's like, do you remember Nina? And Allison Brie's like, well, yeah. Remember what happened to her? And Allison Brie's like, well, she was blackout drunk all the time. Why would we think that this one time she was raped? Or so it's one of those, like, you know. And the scary thing is there's a lot of people out there. It's the same people that say, like, you know, she wore a short skirt, so she was asking for it like that.
Yeah.
So basically, Allison Brie is one of those idiots. Mm-hmm. And to teach her a lesson, she gets her really drunk. She hires a guy to take her up to a hotel room, just leave her there, but has Allison Brie wake up in the hotel room thinking she, like, slept with a guy and cheated on her husband.
So, like, she kind of leaves her in, like, a lurch.
Yes.
Like, thinking, like, something horrible happened. But, like, I think the point was with this particular friend, Allison Brie, was to just make her mind go crazy with, like, questions.
All these things, kind of sinister ways of teaching these people a lesson. Anybody who basically dismissed accounts of rape, just, and you find out that the guy who was the rapist is, like, doing well. He's about to get married. And what happened to Cassie is that she, I guess Nina, who was raped, dropped out of medical school because she was so messed up. Cassie dropped out to help, you know, to her be okay. And now Nina is dead, must have killed herself because
of
everything.
Do we ever find out?
They never say, they say that Nina is dead. And unless she died of some weird illness, it's most likely suicide.
Right.
So this event has, you know, her best friend was raped. Nobody believed her, caused her to ruin her life and then kill herself. And Cassie obviously has not been able to get over.
And her mom is played by Jennifer Coolidge. And the dad is the guy from Pet Sematary 2.
Yeah. And they basically anybody
They're
who knows Cassie
but
knows that she, this totally changed her life. Now, she went from going to med school to working in a coffee shop, and even her boss, Laverne Cox, is like, why are you still working here? You were smart and could have gone to, you know, med school.
And then
her
she was parents, like, well, I should fire you so you'd have a life.
Yeah, like, her parents are like, why don't you date? She's just not, has not been able to get over this grief and this, like, desire for revenge. But it's, you know, so there's these dark themes to it, but
it's done, I don't want to say it's done lightly, but it's done in a way that is stylish? Is that
well,
the right
it's,
word?
It's glossy.
It's
I
glossy.
Think.
It's kind of like a magazine. Like, everyone looks good and
yeah,
it has like a light soundtrack.
For the first two thirds, it's this glossy kind of revenge thriller. I want to wait till they get to the end because that's such a big thing to unpack. But like, it is, like Tim's saying, very glossy, and you're rooting for her because she's literally teaching a lesson to all these fuckers who either enabled or didn't do anything about
dismissive of it or looked the other way.
Yeah, and I think what makes it so effective, especially now, is we know, not just with like the Me Too movement, I don't want to get political, but just with life, we know that there's a million situations where women have been either taken advantage of or raped or something, and people just dismiss charges because it was some, you know, rich,
privileged
white male who, you know, why would you, he wouldn't do it, or the girl drinks, so she must have wanted it, you know, so that's what makes it so true. And so it's kind of like, did you feel like, I liked her getting revenge?
Oh my gosh, I was enjoying the movie because she did it in such a way that it was something I've never seen before. Like, and I've never seen a movie like this before.
And here's the thing. I've never seen a movie like this before, too. And up until this point, she hasn't really done anything physically damaging to any of the people. Like, meaning, she never put the daughter of the dean in a situation with men alone. She never actually hired a guy to rape or take advantage of Alison Brie. Everything is a mind fuck. So why you like her and she's a redeeming character is because she's teaching these big lessons without actually doing anything too horrible, you know?
No, but you know, the thing is like, it also, by her teaching these lessons, it also costs her life. I mean, like, she's still living a life and she's still doing good, but it's like she can't have a relationship.
She's consumed with it. Like, she's there's consumed. A scene with your favorite Molly Shannon.
Molly Shannon.
She goes to visit Nina, her old best friend who committed suicide.
It was such
mom.
A quick scene.
Very quick scene for a, you know, semi-big name actress, but it's basically the mom saying, like, you need to get past this grief or this vengeance.
Like, yeah. She and goes, get we're a life. Getting over it. You need to go over it. So then she does kind of, like, this guy that she went to medical school with comes in, and they have this kind of, like, meet cute where she spits in his coffee, which
well,
is,
she's, like, joking around. Yeah. And you think they introduce this guy who used to go to med school with her, but you think was removed from the whole, you know, rape and Nina situation. And he's just like a sweet gentleman and asks her out. And she finally, you can tell she hasn't.
She's
dated
struggling.
And,
she's struggling. Like, you know, is this guy good? Is this guy bad? But then
she finally gets to a point. She lets her guard down. And you think there's a split part of this where you're like, oh, is this going to turn into like a feel good romantic comedy? Didn't
Which
it feel
it
that
has,
way?
It has. The movie kind of takes like a left turn, not a bad left turn, it just takes like she
just
goes
like
off
a left
her,
like a green arrow left
a
turn.
Green arrow maybe, you know, and it kind of like it steers clear of her revenge, and she kind of has a moment where she's like, oh my gosh, I can have a life with this guy.
Yeah, like she's gonna drop the whole I'm gonna go out every Friday night and pick up and pretend to be drunk to teach a guy a lesson, and like maybe I'm gonna live my life.
There's that awkward moment where like she's walking out with a guy that she's gonna bust, and she walks past her potential love interest.
Yeah, the love interest from it, and she doesn't
like,
tell him
what
she's doing, but he's starting to wonder, like, why is she pretending to be drunk? Like, he even asked her, were you pretending to be drunk?
But then she's persistent, and he's persistent to make it work.
And
but
it, like,
then...
she, well, that's when we get to the last act, if you will,
the
of the
final
movie.
Act. Oh, and they do say, like, throughout the movie, it's like 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, I almost felt like, were that the number of people she had set out to get revenge on? Or was that?
I think it was like the act.
Because there were like six acts then or something. Yeah. Well, maybe it was the act, that movie with
that's true.
With Patricia Arquette.
Mm-hmm. Joey King.
Joey from Friends?
Yeah. How are you doing? See what
like,
I did there?
It's like a weird 6 degree. Look, six acts, the act, Joey King, Joey from Friends. Friendship, Tim
Jennifer
and me.
Aniston.
No. Anyway, well, okay. Before we even do the big reveal, sorry, you know we spoil everything, but you know that's what we do. Alison Brie comes back and basically gives her. She says, and I love that this hasn't been mentioned in 8 years. She says, you know, you didn't know, but there was a video that night that Nina got raped, and she kept it on her cell phone. And she's like, we laughed at it at the time, but obviously no one thought it'd be good to show this to the police. But 8 years later, she gives the video to Cassie.
Which I'm actually kind of surprised, but then as she's leaving, she goes, don't you ever
contact me again. Yeah, yeah. Well, because she knows, because Cassie kind of, you know, she
first off, Alison Brie's performance was great.
She was, yeah, yeah. I mean, Carrie Mulligan is incredible in this, but as a supporting, yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Yes. I mean, it's not, I'm by no means am I saying, you're like Alison
Brie, she stole the show.
She stole this from Little Mulligan. Yeah, no.
I mean, the movie is 99% Carrie Mulligan, 1% Alison Brie, but
right, right.
No,
but I did like her 1%.
She, no, she was of the supporting people, she takes the cake. The cake.
Listen,
what kind of cake?
I want some cake.
So she watches the video. Of course, she's crying. She's seeing it. And
which,
who
I mean,
does
we didn't
see?
Thank God they didn't show it because I can't handle stuff like
no,
that.
No, I thank God we didn't see it either. But who does she see in the video?
Oh, and you can hear him.
You can hear him. Is her love interest. I guess the guy who was such a gentleman to her and was playing. Oh, my God. What is his name?
His name is.
Ryan in it. Yes. The guy that you thought was a gentleman that was removed. And he, not only does he see the rape, he kind of like eggs it on.
Yeah,
and
like,
I don't think he
participates. Do you remember the 1988, do you remember The Accused with Jodie Foster and Kelly McGillis?
Do you know I've never seen
that? It's a downer.
I mean, won an Academy Award for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically
similar.
Yeah, it's very, very similar in the fact that Kelly McGillis is her lawyer, and like Jodie Foster has to, like, these guys gang raped her, and like then she has to like get them to all go to jail.
Does it at least have a happy-ish ending?
They
go to jail? Okay, well, so that's better. No, well, so she realizes, like, her whole world is crushed because the one guy she let in and let her guard down for was like part of this event that has traumatized her for 8 years ago. So she goes to, he's a doctor now, and basically confronts him, shows him the video, and basically tells him, I'm either going to send this video to all your patients and like ruin your career, or you can tell me where the bachelor party of Al, who was the actual rapist who's about to get married, is, because she's going to like some ultimate revenge plot. And he tells her where the party is, and
so then, like,
calls her crazy because, of course, she's the crazy one.
And then so she goes there in a nurse costume.
Oh, so this is the big final act. I can't wait to talk about this.
Oh, my gosh.
Well,
so,
you set it up.
So
yeah.
She goes there, and there's like they have the Britney Spears song playing, Toxic.
Oh, yeah. So you'll notice from all the trailers they played Toxic in a very, like, it's like a string version of it. Which I love. It's just very dramatic.
Very eerie. It's very like Psycho.
Yes, it's very straight, like high strings. It's Toxic. I'm sure it's relating to toxic masculinity. I put that together myself, Tim.
Oh, you did.
I'm so smart. So she's dressed like a stripper, a nurse stripper, going to the bachelor party of the rapist and all his friends, including people that were there.
So she goes there and they all, like, what are the, when you open your mouth and you put drinks in, what's that?
It's just like bartenders, like, pouring shots into people's mouths.
She pours shots
in everyone's mouths.
So she knocks them all out.
Well, she drugged the alcohol, so she would make every guy pass out, yeah.
So the guy's upstairs and he's handcuffed to the bed.
She takes Al,
who is
the groom-to-be and also the rapist of her friend from 8 years ago, to the bed. She handcuffs him to the bed. Then she starts to reveal who she really is. And he's freaking out and you know, calling her crazy and saying, like, you know, not taking any accountability, really.
Her plan was to, like, I guess, put Nina's name, carve it into him so he does not forget what a horrible person he is.
And just to put this out there, that's the first time in any of these revenge schemes she was going to do anything physical. Like, she never hurt any of the guys she put revenge on. She was going
to
carve Nina's name into his body.
Yeah. I mean, like, before everything else, she just wanted to have the people have their lives
ruined.
Like,
you're
ruined.
Never going to forget this person whose life that you ruined.
Right.
And, so she's going up to carve it, and he gets one of his hands free.
I mean, of course I was watching the movie, but I didn't see... I thought she had, I mean, of course, as a viewer, there's surprises and there's twists, of course, but I did not see that coming.
Well, speaking about not seeing that coming, after he gets his hands free, you know, he's a bigger man and he starts struggling
she's like
with her.
So little.
And he takes a pillow and puts it over her face and starts smothering her.
That was tough to
watch. Here's the thing.
Was totally uncomfortable.
And I read about this, Tim, just because I had to read. I read an interview with the director, and she said she had, I think, her dad or her uncle who was a cop or someone, and she asked, how long does it actually take to, in real life, smother a person? And the dad or uncle or whatever said 2.5 minutes. So
oh my God.
She wanted it to feel as real as possible, and so for 2 minutes, I think, straight, he's smothering her with a pillow. And Tim and I were watching this together, and I kept thinking, she's going to break up. She's going to get free.
I was like, okay, well, she had a scalpel. She was going to write the word Nina on him.
Maybe so she'll stab him.
I thought for sure a stab was coming.
I mean, we're sitting there watching, and it's this really uncomfortable, long, intense, smothering scene. And remember, you're watching the protagonist of the movie who's been alive the whole time, basically like you would call in horror the final girl, being smothered, and you keep thinking, okay, you know, she'll get up. 2 minutes later, no, he smothers her, she's dead.
Ugh.
And I think both of our mouths were dropped. I remember looking at you, and you were shocked.
I was like, this girl, we've been through a whole journey, only for her to die?
For her to die in this last thing to the person who is responsible for ruining her
best friend's life,
who committed suicide.
But...
And again, I don't know about you, but still I kept thinking there's got to be a twist. Maybe
there
she
is.
Is
there
pretending,
is.
Pretending, pretend. There's got to be a twist. Gets so to the next morning.
The cute guy from The New Girl.
Max Greenfield
comes Schmidt. And he comforts his killing friend.
Basically, the friend says, oh my God, I killed the stripper or something. Doesn't tell him who she actually was. And rather than saying, oh my God, that's, you know, let's call the police or whatever, comforts him.
Which is
and
crazy.
Together, they burn her body to get rid of the evidence.
Ugh.
And what to me, Tim, was so disturbing about this is
so...
that, like... I swear to God, not only has this probably happened a ton, but that mindset of these, like, rich, privileged men who just think, like, you know what? No big deal. I can get away with
like
it.
Like, anything in their way, we'll take care
exactly.
of
exactly. Oh, rape charges? We'll get someone to take care of this. Oh, oops, I murdered a stripper? We'll get someone to take care of this. Like, it was so real to me. It made me think of, what was that case of the, it was like the athlete who raped a bunch of women or someone and got off for
like
it.
Just
it
got
was like
3 months.
Or something that happened recently in Northern California. But it just was so true to life. It's like, literally...
Well, I
they
mean,
don't
obviously,
care.
I think the director writer was only 35 years old, which is crazy to
female,
me.
Female, yes.
Female. So I was like, just the fact that, I mean, that she, at the age of 35, that this is the way our society is
well,
sad.
But the thing is that as upsetting as that part was, I was just like, oh my God, this is how so much happens, where they just sweep these crimes under the rug because they have the privilege to do so, and that, like, life always doesn't always work out where the person gets what they deserve. Well, luckily, there's an ending after that.
Okay, so apparently she thought she would be in danger. There was danger to be had.
And she's a very smart
person.
She
had a backup
plan. Yes.
Thank God, because, like, as a viewer, you really wanted to see these guys get their comeuppance.
If it had ended like that, well, she had had a backup plan. Apparently, before she went to the bachelor party, she arranged for the video to be sent to the old lawyer of the case with a note that said where she was going. Like, she literally says, if I don't return, I went to Al something's bachelor party. Here's a video of the rape, blah, 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 blah. And so the day of Al's wedding, the cops come to pick him up. But the best part is that she also did, which is this possible to really do? You can schedule text messages to be sent.
I mean, I'm not technical, but I mean, yes, I'm sure there is.
She had a scheduled text message scheduled for the day of the wedding to be sent to Ryan, the guy who was her boyfriend that Jen, she found out was part of the rape, that said, what did it say?
It
like,
said like,
having fun at the
having fun at the wedding,
like, you know, sure, like something about like getting what you deserve, love Cassie
and then,
Nina,
like, winky face at the
winky
end.
Winky face.
And that was the end. Before that, the like five police cars show up, the groom is going to jail, like the other guy is going to jail.
Yeah. So basically you feel a little, even though Cassie, the protagonist, Carey Mulligan, is dead, you feel like finally they have the video of the rapes, and I know he's involved with that. They know that he is the cause of her disappearance, aka murder, so they're gonna get him for that. They even show where they burned the body, that her necklace that said Nina on it was there.
They find
so meaning there's they found the evidence that obviously they killed her. And you're thinking that the guy Ryan, because they see the videotape, is gonna be part. So basically everybody's gonna get their just
deserts.
But like, it definitely, so overall, what do you think overall?
You know, I liked it because it's something I've never seen before. I think it's, even though the topic is ridiculously sad. I am glad that people across America will see that there's assholes out there.
I'm going to take it even a step further and say I loved it. I really did like it. And this is why. Like, again, it wasn't a traditional horror movie, but first off, the writing, the movie was great. Carey Mulligan was incredible. Like you said, like probably Oscar worthy. But I just thought the story was told so well, and it was so true to life, and it's dark and uncomfortable, but again, it's like, so is life. And it was such a witty way of doing it, because it was like dark, but there was like funny parts, and there was sad parts.
You really, really wanted justice to be served.
But it was also real in that not everything just worked out for the better. Like, these awful things did happen, but it's like, you almost feel like that, because they at least got arrested in the end, that it's like at least her life, or what she gave her life for, was for something. And it sucks because you don't want her to get killed. But like, I don't know. I just thought it was done really well.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly did not know what to expect. I mean, of course, I saw the trailer and I was like, this will be good. But I guess it was an interesting tone. Like, I was like, I don't want to say it was a dark comedy.
I know. It jumps from genre. It felt, you're right, I totally don't know if it's not comedy, and it's not drama, but it's not straight horror.
Right,
it's
because
just
right in the middle
in
of the movie, they do sing to Paris Hilton's song.
My God.
So that was a little, you know what I mean? Like, we don't know.
It's genre bending. I hate when people say that, but it really is. But it's just, I can't recommend this enough.
Yeah. Pay the $20.
It is. I mean, the performances are great. The movie's great. It's going to stick with you. Yeah. I really do. I think
we're talking about it.
Well, I mean, I feel like whether you are a woman who's maybe been in a situation like this, whether you're a man who thinks you can get away with the situation, or whether you're someone who hasn't been part of a situation but just knows that this kind of stuff exists in life, it's just done well. I don't know.
You know,
it was just good.
I mean, since I'm a gay man, I have never dated women. Truth be told.
Wait, but you've gone on like dates with girls,
I mean,
right?
But sure.
Did you kiss their hands and go,
I was like, good night, bye.
Like, good night,
no.
I gotta go jerk off to men.
Matt. No. Damn. You know what? No, but I'm just saying, like, I can't imagine being
in a situation like
that. Yeah, I mean, like, and I'm, you know what, I'm also happy I'm gay.
I mean, yes, I am not a woman who's been in a situation like that. I, though, grew up with a very strong, dominant mom, very strong, dominant sister, so always was very protective of women in general, but I'm never going to pretend to say I know what it feels like to be a girl in a situation like that, how a girl's judged for every little thing, how, I remember my mom once told me, she was like, you know, you don't understand. It's like, even just walking down the street at night as a woman, you just have to be afraid in general.
I agree.
I remember feeling like
that
sucks.
It does suck. And not only at nighttime. That's
even worse. Yeah. Good point. Yeah. You're right. And it's just, or that you think for a job, and again, I don't want to get too political, but that like you have to try doubly as hard, you know, or that you're not going to, or you're going to be looked over just because. And I've never, I'm gay and I'm Jewish. Two things that there's a lot of prejudice about, but neither of those things are like, how do I explain
on
this?
Your radar every
on
day.
On my forehead, meaning when you meet me, you don't immediately know that I'm Jewish or gay, maybe, who knows.
I just find you annoying.
Exactly. Annoying, I can deal with. No, yes. But like, you can't hide, you know, that you're being a woman, I guess. And so, like, so preconceived notion stuff, I haven't had to deal with that like women have. And so it's definitely something that I have empathy for, but like, it's a struggle that I just can't even imagine, you know?
I agree.
But this is, again, I totally recommend this movie. Great performances, great everything. Great, great, great. Right, Tim?
Yes, yes, Matt.
But I feel like, yeah, this was such a good one to talk about, but I feel, wow, we talked a long time in an episode. Let's move to we always go polar opposite. No.
This is a little, this is very opposite.
This is very opposite in terms of many things. So we watched a movie called Horizon Line. Now,
which, by the way, title
doesn't make sense.
Yeah, because we're majorly shifting gears.
I feel like it should be called, like, you know, Lost in a Plane. So it stars Allison Williams.
From the HBO show Girls.
And from the
Perfection.
The Perfection. I was about to say The Privilege.
Never watched Girls.
It stars Allison Williams and a really hot guy named Alexander Draiman, who plays Jackson.
Yes, and Keith David.
And here's the thing. This movie doesn't need a lot of setup, and then we can just get right into it.
She has commitment issues, Allison Williams, who plays Sarah.
Sarah.
And Sarah was hooking up with Jackson at this... Where are they? What country?
Well, they're on an island, and I feel like they said the island was called Maurice. I've never heard of an island... No, Pascal was her friend. Oh. Well, yeah, she basically had a 1 year stint on an island and then left, and she had a boyfriend, Jackson.
But she just leaves Jackson. But she like literally pays for the beers and walks out.
Rather than saying goodbye to him, I guess she got a new job in London. She literally leaves in the middle, and it flashes to 1 year later, and she's returning to the island for
and
her friend's
wedding.
And by the
way, Allison Williams is gorgeous.
Beautiful.
Like, I mean, like, she's flawless.
Well, I mean, how old is she?
I have no idea.
She's probably
younger than me.
Oh, I think so.
Oh, I mean,
the fucking Pope is younger than you, Tim.
Well, you know what? He's a nice
guy. He is a younger guy. No.
So she goes to London, but then she comes back for Pascal's wedding, not the name of the island.
Yes. No, Pascal. It's a year later. She sees the guy who's, of course, a little angry at her for
he's
basically
leaving
him. He's
got longer hair,
him.
Which I thought was a wig.
The hair didn't look so good, but he looked so good. So
yeah, I thought he looked better with short hair, but I did not like a goatee. I don't like a goatee. So all the men out there.
Everyone, if you want to date Tim, don't have a goatee. Look, everyone, shaving,
I'm
shaving.
I'm just kidding. I'm during this pandemic, whatever you want.
Whatever you want, anything. So she goes back and, you know, for the wedding, the night before the wedding, she ends up hooking up with Jackson again, rekindling
the
flame.
I mean, they could have done more.
Well, but here's the thing, which is PG-13. But what's funny is that these selfish bitches, they decide to, like, they sleep late the day of the wedding and they miss the ferry to wherever island the wedding is going to be on. So the only way to get there is they have to get a flight on a, I guess it would be called like a private plane or a charter plane or whatever. It's a tiny little biplane that is being flown by, what is that actor?
Keith
David, yes. Mm-hmm. And of course, they're the only two that missed the ferry, which again, remember, I was like,
you don't do this on someone's wedding.
Exactly.
Day.
I get it. You want to hook up with someone, have a night of passion, but like to jeopardize your friend's wedding.
You just said a night of passion.
A night of passion. No, I mean, but you know, a hookup or whatever. But it's like, so of course, they missed the ferry there. So they have to take this little tiny plane.
Okay, so they get on the plane and like.
I know we're laughing. It's so ridiculous.
Okay, so this is where here's the thing. I didn't hate this movie. I didn't hate it. I you just have to leave your brain at the door.
You just have, if you have no brain, you'll love it. No. So in the middle of the flight, the guy who, Keith David, who's
he
playing Freddie,
heart pills.
The pilot has a heart attack and just dies.
So she reveals, like, I've had one or two lessons.
I know. Well, I will say this. The setup and the reason why we picked this, because the trailer...
It's an amazing trailer.
I would
trailer.
Say, if you're on a tiny plane and the pilot has a heart attack and dies, like, that
scary.
Is a terrifying
And you know,
thought.
Here's the thing. Allison Williams is a good actress. Let me clear my throat. She's a great actress. But her reaction to him having a heart attack and suddenly having to fly a plane was so like she just drove through to Burger King and was like, okay, like, I will have a Burger King.
Yes,
I will
like,
have fries.
Like not fearing for your life. Well, the funny thing is then again, of like Tim said, of course it's convenient that she just happened to have had a few flight or pilot lessons. So she's able, after they push his body back to the back, she's able to sort of get control of the plane. But like Tim said, her and Jackson, the hot guy, who's the only other passenger, they're not acting like two people who are like, oh my God, we're going to die because
yeah,
we can't
they
fly
they never
a plane.
Say like we're going to... Do they actually say we're going to die? Like,
so
oh my God, oh my
says,
God.
She says, this can't be it. Like, it'd be the end. But for the first part of it, like literally, like Tim and I were talking, we'd be like crying in a corner if
oh
this happened.
Oh my gosh. I would mean, like... When I saw the trailer, I was like, okay, well, they showed us this. Like, how are they going to react? So... I guess I wanted a bigger reaction out of both characters.
And they just didn't. And so they try to figure out, their GPS is broken.
They try to use their phones.
They can't get in touch with anybody. They do Mayday, but they barely get anyone on the other side. And they end up flying through a random storm.
Oh, yeah. They go through
the
storm and the guy was like, he goes, whatever you do, don't go to the water because we'll have so much trouble trying to find you in the water. So don't
like fly into the water. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And also, yeah. But they go through. I thought that storm appeared out of nowhere. It was like a beautiful sunny day. Suddenly there's a storm. They're driving through total CGI with lightning
but
and
you
everything.
Know, it looked, I can't really say it looked real.
From all those
know.
Flights
I mean,
you've
but
flown.
It looked good.
It did look good, but it looked like too polished. I don't know.
No, the movie looked very polished.
You know, she's able to maneuver her way on flying the plane out of the storm.
Okay.
But again, their reactions, like Tim's saying, to go back to this, everything's like, yeah, we did it. Like,
we,
I'm just like,
we got through the storm.
They're just,
I was like,
never
no, no,
scared.
No, you're going to die.
Never terrified.
Okay,
but it gets
so,
worse.
Okay, it does get worse, because then the guy's like, okay, there's a leak.
A fuel
so let
leak,
me take
yeah.
some duct tape, climb out to the to the front
outside
of
the plane,
outside of the plane, and use duct tape to cover it up.
So he literally ties a flimsy rope around himself, which, by the way, all I know, I've never opened the window on a plane,
it'd be like,
but just from opening the window on like a car going maybe 40, 50 miles per hour, and the speed of the wind, if you're in a plane going like 200, 300 miles per hour, the second you open that window, you would just be sucked out.
Yeah.
Nope, not them. He ties a
and
flimsy
tear
rope.
Off duct tape?
He is able to hold on to himself with his flimsy rope and like climb off the plane and tie the fuel leak with duct tape all in the wind while the plane is flying.
Okay, and then, okay, so then we think we're done with the crazy.
Nope,
no,
not yet. It gets crazy.
It gets crazy. So then like, we're low on fuel. We've got 5 bottles of
alcohol, and they're like
alcohol. Island
alcohol. They're like a component of fuel is ethanol alcohol. So maybe this alcohol can give us enough fuel. So they decide
so
they're going
to
pour.
She decides to go up there with one arm holding on, and then with the other arm dumping the bottles
yeah.
of rum into
the fuel tank,
which is on the wing.
But this is the more insane part, because
one-handed.
She doesn't even tie a rope to her. She literally climbs out the plane just holding with her, I guess, incredibly immense strength. And
she's
then
super skinny,
she's holding
but
on with one hand and pouring multiple bottles of alcohol into fuel tank. Again, no rope, nothing, and while the plane is flying, and we're supposed to just think that's possible.
Yeah, and you know, here's the thing. I did not think it's possible.
We were laughing the whole time.
I was like, all right.
Because literally it got to the point where I thought they were going to just start doing jumping jacks on the plane. Like, I mean, it was acting like being outside of a plane is so easy.
When she was done putting the alcohol in, and like somehow she swung her body back into the plane.
Everything
I was like,
fine.
I guess, because I saw it, I believe it, but I don't believe it.
No, it was just, and by this point, again, it's just getting so over the top ridiculous. But then we get to the point where they're like, they don't know where they're going to land, and they barely have any more fuel. So they see this spot of, they think it's a little mini island. And they go, and they're trying to go. Remember, she's never landed. So they're trying to go down. And I remember
she skipped class that day.
During this time, Tim, I was thinking, if they have her just land perfectly, having never landed, I'm going to just, this is ridiculous. Thankfully, the only realistic thing, they actually don't have her land perfectly. She does it too early, and they land in the water.
Oh, upside
so that,
down.
Upside
and they're
down.
Sinking.
And at that point, I was like, at least there's a little realism that everything just doesn't work out when your pilot has a heart attack.
Right.
But,
oh, which, by the way, we need to go back a little bit, because they were like, okay, we need, like, because we just put the fuel in, we need to, like,
lighten the load.
So, you know, the sweet guy that had the heart attack, they throw him out of the plane.
Push him out of the plane. I mean, it's like, she's like, you know what, I'll do it. And she puts the picture of his deceased wife
in his
body
pocket.
And kicks him out of
yeah,
the plane.
Yeah, not just a push, it's a kick.
I mean, it was laughably ridiculous. I'm like, okay, there goes the funeral, I guess.
I was like, I guess the fish will like him.
It was ridiculous. But anyway, so they land in the water. But of course, luckily, they're so close to the land that it's shallow. So there's this big, you know, suspenseful scene where they're trying to get out as it's filling with water.
I will say that scene was done very well, because they're underneath water and like
that was probably
drowning.
My favorite. That was probably my favorite scene, because it was the only suspenseful scene that felt realistic.
Like,
everything
like,
when they were flying felt so over the top. I was just like, this is ridiculous.
I was like, okay, well, maybe one of them's not going to make it. And I was like, okay, this will, I don't want to say redeem itself, but I was like, their realism's back on the table.
Exactly. But she's able to get out of the plane, and then she helps the guy out, and they get out and they get to the little patch of land, and you're like, okay. And I remember first thinking, okay, but they have no idea where they are, who's going to save them. But no, it's worse. They realize the patch of land wasn't actually an island. It's a sandbar that disappears when the tide comes in. So they realize
they have
quickly,
a very short time.
Yes, that quickly they're going to be covered in water. And luckily they have one life vest, so it switches to later, and they're there just like floating in the ocean.
Which I will say, that part was very heartbreaking, just because how sucky just to be like, he already was pretty bruised up and like had like a tear in his arm and like his face, her face was all cut up. So they're just a mess.
But she still looked flawless.
But she still looked.
No, I did feel that way too. You think it's like, did they were able to get the plane going, keep it going, land all just to drown it, like, because there was no light. So that by that part, I was like, they can't kill them now. But anyway, they're like sitting in the water. They even show a shark go by.
Do. I was like, okay, well, I was like, because his arm's like bleeding blood. So I was like, okay, are they going to get eaten by a shark and that's the end?
That's what I thought. I was like, if that'd be a really big letdown.
Because they did show a shark.
They did show a shark, but I think it was just to, you know, like to get you nervous. But anyway, they're sitting there and they're like, we need water. And they're losing hope. And then you see a ship that miraculously come by and
then
see them.
Guess what? They get on. But then they do kind of drag it out, like her getting up. I was like, well,
the camera angles look, it's almost like it's on the surface of the water. So you think as she's getting to the boat and being taken out of the boat, is a shark going to like jump up and chomp her? But it doesn't. It's just to try to keep suspense going. And they both survive and they kind of laugh like, we made it, you know?
And they look at each other like,
they said they're never going to leave each other again, meaning she's, which again, don't know how it's going to survive. She has a job in London. He works on the island, but they said they'll never leave each other.
After that, would you really want to live on the island anymore?
I was going to say, I think he needs to move to London with her and they need a break from that. No, I wouldn't want to. And I think I'm sure a situation like that would bring two people together, but it's just, I think what sucked with this movie overall is that
not enough nudity.
Definitely for him. And no, I guess I would say it's just, there's two things I didn't like. One, for the first half, I gotta say their performances. Like, if you're not scared in a movie as an actor, I as a viewer am not gonna be scared.
I thought they had moments where they looked genuinely scared, but for the most part, I was like, and the thing is I really like her, Allison Williams, in The Perfection. She's great.
She was.
But
she
this
was.
Movie, like, I
not
don't.
Not the best. Not the best. Okay, and that's so. That's my first thing. The reactions I thought was so understated. And the second thing was the over the top. Both of them crawling outside the plane scenes,
twice.
Which are so beyond. There's some things I can suspend belief. I can, or is it suspend disbelief?
I know what you're saying.
I can do that, but for those two scenes, I was just laughing. It was. So
I get
ridiculous.
It. It's a movie.
No, but I mean, it was obviously movies, but I can suspend the disbelief. So to believe in supernatural shit or crazy other shit. But when you're crawling, holding onto a plane with one arm, that I'm like,
impossible.
Come on.
Impossible.
Exactly. So
that's the thing. Like, if it's impossible, why show it to us?
Well, I mean, again, I...
It's not Marvel.
I wouldn't recommend it. I gotta say, I wouldn't.
Okay,
sorry.
I would recommend it because the two leads are hot. And, you know, it's a fun movie, but at the same time, if you're looking for realism, look elsewhere.
Look elsewhere. I mean, you're right. I guess it's fun in that it's nonstop
action. It's
short action.
Enough. It's short enough.
Yeah, it's nonstop action. Okay, look, we've definitely talked about way worse movies on this podcast. And
Breach.
It's not even close. Not even close. But it just wasn't. I guess it's so hard because when you're comparing it to, like, a gem, like Promising Young Woman, you know? It's just crazy. It feels like it pales in comparison.
And
you know
we watched
I mean?
Him on the same night, so
it is. It's almost. It's like watching an Oscar-worthy movie and then watching
something that will never get near an Oscar.
Like, what's a movie that would never get near an
the
Oscar?
Blob.
The Blob. Oh, Attack of the Killer. I actually like
Attack of
the Killer Tomatoes.
With George Clooney.
I actually like Attack of the Killer. I'm trying to think of a movie I just thought sucked. God, why am I not thinking of? Because I probably don't remember
anything by Rob Zombie.
Oh. Trash. Well, the thing, yes, I, but the first Halloween Rob Zombie one I thought was okay.
Halloween.
I know.
Do
Halloween 2 is trash. Yeah, everyone agrees with that, right? Okay.
Yeah.
No, actually, there are some people I've seen on some Halloween boards because I'm on a lot. Some people think that the Rob Zombie interpretation was like the grainy realness of horror.
Ew.
Here's the thing. I respect that opinion. But that's not what Halloween was supposed to be. Like, Halloween was supposed to be
I should have gone with something else.
I know. Now you're going to get me talking forever. It's supposed to be suspense and just, like, terror and not trash. Anyway, we don't have to do it. Well, but I think go out, pay the money to see Promising Young Woman. It's great.
Well, we did pay for the second movie, but it's only $6.99.
I'd say if you have a few friends to split it with, which you don't because you're not seeing friends right now.
Pandemic.
But, you know, if you want some schlocky fun, I guess, Horizon Line, maybe.
But that title's horrible, by the way.
Yeah, that's the thing. It should have been called, like, Death at 25,000 or Terror at 25,000 Feet.
Absolutely. A better title. Maybe people will actually see it.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Anyway. So Promising Young Woman is very promising.
Very promising. Yeah. I'm sure it's going to do well even without being like wide released, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it is going to make money. But anyway. Okay. Well, thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Happy Horror Time. I'm Tim Murdoch and Matt's not here. Bye.
Oh. Okay. Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Happy Horror Time.
This podcast is hosted by Matt Emmer and myself, Tim Murdoch. It's co-produced by Jacob Randall.
You can find Happy Horror Time on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many other platforms, including Happy TV, a free streaming app with content dedicated to the LGBTQ plus community.
If you'd like to stay updated on our developments, please like and follow the Happy Horror Time podcast page on Facebook. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Happy Horror Time.
And don't hesitate to send us an email at happyhorrortime@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think of the podcast, any movie recommendations, or any horror stars you'd like us to interview.
To support the podcast, please visit patreon.com/happyhorrortime and sign up to be a patron. You'll gain access to additional content, including the bonus episode we just released last month. We're planning on releasing one new bonus episode every month moving forward.
But before we go, Tim, we'd like to recommend Totally 80s Room on YouTube and Instagram. Not only does this page post the coolest clips from 80s pop culture, but the creator assembled his own 80s era museum filled with retro products and all kinds of fun nostalgia.
Anyone who's experienced the 80s has to check out Totally 80s Room.
I'm Matt Emmert.
And I'm Tim Murdoch.
And thanks again for listening to Happy Horror Time.